welcome to Inside Education, the podcast for educators who are interested in teaching. My name is Sean Delaney. I'm a primary teacher and teacher educator myself, and I'm particularly interested in practices of teaching and in mathematics education. You can listen to or download hundreds of previous Inside Education podcasts by going to seandelaney.com and clicking on podcasts. You can follow me on Twitter using the handle at InsideEd, and you can email me at insideeducationpodcast@yahoo.com. On this week's podcast, I bring you a series of interviews that I recorded at the 2019 National Finals of SciFest, which were held last Friday at the Marino Institute of Education. This marks the 14th year of SciFest, which is a national event that aims to encourage a love of science, technology, engineering and maths through active, collaborative, inquiry-based learning and to provide a forum for second-level students to present and display their scientific investigations. I met up with a selection of students, teachers and organisers associated with the event, and I bring you my discussions with these people on this week's programme. I begin with Sheila Porter, the founder of SciFest, who I spoke to on a previous episode. I first asked Sheila to tell me about the highlights of the 2019 event from her perspective.
The highlights of the 2019 event, well, 10,000 students, that's a big highlight, but it's also, the students are very aware of climate action, and there's a lot of projects here today on how to solve the big problem we have with the environment.
Any of the solutions that are potentially workable, do you think?
Well, I think they are. I mean, these are all bright young people. Like, 10,000 students entered SciFest last year, and these are the best of the best. They're all winners in their own right. They've all won at a regional. So before they even get here, their project is of a very high standard. And, I mean, they're removing plastics from water. There's biodegradable clothes. There's aquaponics. You wonder sometimes how they come up with such brilliant ideas. The whole future ahead of them, and they can dream and come up with solutions that we can't think of. We see too many problems.
And what is it about science teaching that makes SciFest a good outlet for the work of the teachers?
Well, at the moment with the new junior cycle, we're trying to encourage more investigative approach. So with SciFest, the student comes up with their own idea, they design a project, they go out then and they collect data and they come up with solutions. So it's something that comes from the student's own interest. And I think that's why it supports then the classroom work. And the teachers all seem to love SciFest and the students love it. So it's a way that you can do something thinking outside the box, which is really what it should be about, rather than just rote learning.
And you've said that up to 10,000 students have been involved so far. How many students are involved in the final?
In the final, we've around 70 students, around 40 projects here today. But they would be all the top prize winners. We have 16 regions, some of the runners-up, and then we have Specsavers Awards here, and we have Boston Scientific Medical Device Award students. So a great cross-section of projects.
And for people who are interested in getting involved next year, how can they go about it?
It's very easy. We encourage everybody to enter SciFest. There's no entry fee. Nobody gets turned away. Sometimes schools run their own little in-house one, so we've lots of schools do that. But also, the regions are open to anybody. We've 16 regions. The entry forms will be up around the beginning of March. So they just go online, they think up their project, go online and sign up, and then turn up on the day to present their project.
And you've mentioned that there's a new video initiative this year. Can you say a little bit about that?
Well, the video initiative was actually introduced last year. This is its second year, and we're calling it the SciFest STEM Outreach Award. So we give all the finalists the opportunity to submit a 2-minute video talking about their project, and then we put them up online, and it's a public vote. Last year was the first year, so it was kind of low-key, but this year now it's much bigger. I mean, a couple of the projects had over 11,000 votes, which is just fantastic. And it's a lovely way, too, for other students to see what type of projects you can do, how everything's possible.
So this is a way for students to really communicate about their projects?
Yeah, it's a way for them to share their ideas with other students, other teachers, and just the general public. And because it's coming from the students, other students are listening to them, so I think they learn from one another, from their peers, and it encourages them then to enter.
And all those videos are accessible from your website?
Well, at the moment now we have them down because we had a 10-day stretch in which the public could vote. So today now we have a trophy for the video that had the most votes, and we'll present that at the award ceremony, and then we'll put them up then after that, because it's a big secret now. The tension is building as to, nobody knows, but they were watching, you could watch the votes growing as the week went on, so it was very exciting.
But by the time this goes out, at least, they will be back up on the website.
Oh, they'll be back up on the website, yeah.
And finally, what's your message, Sheila, to science teachers about the importance of teaching science?
I was a science teacher myself, and I think the message should be that the students themselves should be doing the work. You know, you should be encouraging them to go out there and find out things for themselves. Like, that's what they enjoy doing. And, okay, they have to learn a certain amount of information they have to learn and remember. But if you can get them enthusiastic, so I think it's encouraging them to love science, really. And there's a whole world out there that needs investigating, you know, and so to encourage them to do that, really.
Simple but crucial advice there about scientific investigation from SciFest CEO Sheila Porter. SciFest is an organisation that works at local, regional, national and international levels. One of the regional organisers is Aideen Hodgins from TU Dublin Blanchardstown, and she told me about her role.
I am the regional coordinator for Blanchardstown, Technological University of Blanchardstown. So I would organise the whole competition on campus in Blanchardstown. So I would have on average about between 100 and 120 projects coming into Blanchardstown every May. So it's usually the first Wednesday in May we run the competition, and we have students from all over. Some come from Kildare, from maybe Navan, Cavan, and then surrounding Dublin regions as well, and of course our own Dublin 15 area as well.
What kind of projects did you get this year?
Okay, so we did a mix of projects. We had a lot of computer-based projects. I mean, the students are really into technology at the moment. We had a lot of interesting projects based on, like, plants. Horticulture was a big area as well. We always give out a horticulture prize because we run horticulture as part of our programme. And we had, you know, students with how makeup affects you, or, you know, bacteria on makeup. So loads of different projects this year, very diverse.
And are you a science teacher yourself?
No, I work in the marketing and development unit, so it's part of my event management hat, I suppose. I have many hats, and event management is one of them, so that's how I run the event, yeah.
Can you say a little bit about the work that goes into organising the regional final?
The applications come into us, and the closing date's usually about middle of March. We have to process the applications. I usually allow 10 projects per school if there's a SciFest school run. If there isn't a SciFest school, then I usually have about 5 projects per school I'll allow in. Now, obviously, I'm not very strict on it. I'm probably one of the easiest coordinators to get around. I always look after the children. So what happens then is we process the applications, and then, of course, I have to start the whole event management side of things. So things like ordering in the displays, the tables, the chairs, coordinating then with our lecturers on campus for judges, and then I also get external judges. Sheila Porter, CEO of SciFest, would usually provide me with a list, and I'll contact them to see if the day is correct, it'll suit them. Then the students, you know, I have to contact the teachers just to make sure that, you know, they know the date, they know the requirements for the date, the schedule, organise obviously the catering then for the event, and a whole lot of, but it's fun. It's a great fun day, you know, so hard work in the background, but when the day comes, it's all worthwhile, you know.
And when you're looking for judges, what kind of criteria are you looking for in the judges?
Okay, so on campus, obviously, we have courses like mechatronics computing. So I'd be looking for lectures for that area. We also have lectures in horticulture for the science end of things. And then, of course, the judges would be from our industries. Our sponsors as well would be coming to judge. So basically a good mix of judges, because we have really diverse amount of projects, so we need judges to judge those, you know, different projects, and make sure the students get an equal judging, you know, in the specialised area of the students' project.
An insight there into the work of the regional coordinators of SciFest and the organisation that goes into the regional events that are held around the country. I next spoke to 3 students about their project. They were Ella Shanahan, Eva Connolly and Wilhelmine Boschart from Loreto Balbriggan. They told me about their project, beginning with Eva.
We decided to make biodegradable clothes to combat clothing pollution, as it's such a problem, especially in third world countries, damaging their agricultural land, their water supply, as well as in Ireland and countries all over the world.
So clothing waste is a really big problem in the world because fast fashion, like shops like Penny's, are so cheap that people are buying more and more clothes and then just getting rid of them really easily. And they end up in a landfill, which is then bad for the environment and also affects human health and disease. So we decided to make a fibre that you can use for clothes, but when you put it in a landfill, it biodegrades and it doesn't cause that bad impact on the world.
Can you describe the fibre, Ella?
Yeah, of course. So what we used to make the fibre was polylactic acid and sodium alginate. So sodium alginate is found in seaweed. It's derived from seaweed and it is currently used in wound dressings, calcium alginate. And we just wanted to make our fibre out of these because they're biodegradable.
And what does the fibre feel like on your skin?
It's really soft, and polylactic acid, which it's made of, has been already used to heal wound dressings and rashes, so it's really good on the skin. It's soft and it heals it. It's also quite strong.
When you say soft, is that like wool or like cotton?
It's silky, so it's kind of fancy.
That's in its raw form as well, so it probably could be manipulated to feel like different fibres.
So how have you tested it? What exactly have you done at this stage, Ella?
Well, at this stage, we've done tensile strength testing, water absorption testing.
What was the first kind of testing?
Tensile strength. So we used a data logger in our school lab just to attach the
fibers. It's to
see fibers.
How much force it takes to until it snaps.
So how strong is the fiber? So we tested when it was dry and when it was wet, and it's still strong when it's wet. So if, say, you're wearing it and it rains, it's not like the fiber will break. It will stay strong. It'll also stay strong when it's dry.
And how many times could you wash it before it will degrade?
Well, we've done detergent tests on it, but we need to do repeated ones to see exactly. But the washing doesn't make it biodegrade. What makes it biodegrade is putting it in compost facility, where there's microorganisms that can, not facility, like in your own compost bin, where there's microorganisms that can break it down.
So it's really strong. It will last.
Yeah,
it's really durable.
Okay, it's really durable. Okay. Do you think it will catch on?
Yes,
definitely.
Like all the shops like Bershka and H&M are already getting on the bandwagon and using sustainable fashion. It's more current than ever to use sustainable fashion, and it's really getting in vintage clothes as well. Like just bringing back all the old and just being energy efficient is really big today.
We want to mass produce it as well.
We would love.
But we don't have the facilities in Ireland yet.
We would love to make nappies out of it as well as sanitary products, because it is highly absorbent material and as well obviously biodegradable, so it's just ideal for that combination.
So it sounds like there's huge potential for this. Have you thought about how you're going to be able to bring it forward?
We want to patent it first, so that's something we have to do, and then we also need to find a mass electric spinning machine, which is not available in Ireland at the moment.
And no one else has used this particular fibre?
It's completely new fibre. The polylactic acid and sodium alginate blend is completely new and unique. Hasn't been done before.
So where did you get the idea from?
Well, we just kind of researched any biodegradable fibres, and then we heard about calcium alginate from more articles when we were deciding on our project, so we decided let's just mix them together and see what happens, and it worked.
Yeah. And finally, I want you to think about the best science lesson you've had in your secondary school so far. Now, you'll probably all have different answers on that, but what makes a good science lesson in your school? Can you remember a particular science lesson you really enjoyed or you learned a lot from?
I think if a science teacher, like in physics, you learn about all the theory and everything, but when you apply it into real life situations, then it gets so much better. Like we had to throw a tennis ball outside of a window and to measure gravity, but the fact that it's like in real life situations, like gravity is a thing, it's not just something that's a theory, like that makes it good if you like use real life things.
Thanks, Willemien. Eva?
I remember in chemistry we looked at like the science of fireworks and what materials like make certain colours, and I just remember I found that really interesting, like light making all the different colours, and then going out on Halloween and then seeing, like being like, oh, that's a magnesium firework, that's a sodium firework. I just like that made me just think like, oh, I can just like apply this to anywhere in my life.
And Ella?
There's so many experiments that we've done in class, it's so hard to pick, but I love doing a collapsing can experiment in the physics class just to study pressure, and yeah, I thought it was really fascinating.
And Ella, Eva and Willemien show how science can be applied to help protect the environment as well as to other aspects of our lives. Willemien, Ella and Eva won the Berlin Long Night of Science Award at the National SciFest Finals. In the history of research, one interesting case study is how long it took researchers to discover the negative health effects of smoking tobacco. However, two students at the national finals of SciFest have begun studying the effects of vaping. They are Quavon Boulair and Ilan Wall from Presentation Brothers College, Cork. They told me about the project, with Quavon speaking first.
Our project investigates the acute toxicity of e-vape liquid and daphnia. This project really came about when we were investigating vaping and the whole process around it. And vaping at that time, there was very little research and projects available for us to view. So we really had to develop our own kind of understanding of how it came about. So at this time when we began developing our project, we both watched the same YouTube video on the effects of vaping. So this is really what sparked our interest.
Yeah. Using information from our biology class, we decided to test vape liquid on Daphnia pulex, which are small little pond water creatures. And they're regularly used in many different types of toxicology tests around the world. So we chose this type of test and this type of creature and this type of project because it was so topical and it's a relatively easy yet accurate way to conduct the tests. Yeah.
So what did you find?
We found that vaping is acutely toxic to Daphnia pulex, and at the levels we tested, we found that the EC50 was greater than 1 gram per litre. And EC50 basically means that the effective concentration 50%. So once 50% of our test subjects are mobilised, which means they're trapped on the top of the liquid or, in worst case, dead, then that liquid is toxic at that level. So we found that at least 20% of all of our test subjects were immobilised at these concentrations.
Why was that a good insect to conduct the test on?
While more basic, their systems are very similar to humans. They have a similar enough reproductive system, and you can, even under a microscope, you can see the systems working and their digestive tract and their lungs, or not their lungs, their gills. And they tend to absorb chemicals from their surroundings similar enough to a human lung.
So based on your findings then, what conclusions have you drawn?
We really found that vaping is acutely toxic to humans and that we really need to upscale our results and increase the awareness around vaping, because many people confuse the absence of evidence for an absence of harm, which is huge these days.
So have you plans to take this study further, Ilan?
Yeah, we definitely hope to take it further. We've been in contact with several researchers from UCC in Cork, where we come from, and we'd love to get in contact with them and do maybe slightly more high-level tests, for example, to analyse the chemicals before and after they've been heated in the vape, and to determine what's going on there, because there's been a lot of illnesses arising from vaping in the US. Over 40 people have died and 2,000 are in intensive care with vaping-related illnesses.
Okay, that's interesting. Moving out from your own particular project, thinking of learning science in secondary school, can you think of a particular science lesson that really inspired you or that you really found enjoyable or educational?
Definitely. As we were beginning this project, it went hand in hand with what we were doing in biology at that time. And that's really what sparked our interest and sparked the development of this project, because we learned that Daphnia were used globally in toxicology testing. So this is really what brought on our project.
What about you, Ilan?
Well, we were in the same biology class, so I suppose that would be the same. But also, I have to bring it back to my first-year science lesson when I first entered in SciFest, and that kind of got me interested in the science fairs and science projects.
Quavon and Ilan won the ISTA award at the national finals of SciFest. Next, we get the perspective of a science teacher. Christina Troy is a maths and science teacher at Kishogue Community College in Lucan. I first asked Christina if she could tell me about her own interest in science.
Yeah, so I'm a science and maths teacher in Kishogue, and I have a great flair for science ever since I was a young child, entering young competitions myself in my own school. And I suppose I wanted to pass on that experience of taking part in these competitions with my own students. So we host a huge SciFest at school competition every January. So we'd have all first years and TYs taking part. So we'd have over 90 projects every year before we get to the SciFest at college competition. So it's great to see young people so enthusiastic for science and building their own interests, I suppose, and put them into projects.
And where do you think your own flair for science came from?
I lived on a farm, but I do live on a farm, and I was always interested about animals, their health, and, you know, their biological processes that go on. And that flair for biology really stemmed from that and looking after them. And when I went into secondary school and started studying biology, things started to make sense and started to click. And my own teacher was so energetic and enthusiastic about it. I suppose it kind of rubbed off me a little bit more as well.
So Inside Education is particularly interested in teaching. So can you say a little bit about what it was about the teachers you had who made science so interesting for you?
I suppose it was so applicable to me
and to what happens in my own life, what I see on the farm, and how I was able to just relate it all to everyday life. It wasn't all just reading out of the book, it was inquiry-based learning, it was seeing things on TV and saying, oh, I actually know the science behind that. So it was things like that, just everything began to kind of click together like a puzzle, I suppose.
Are there any particular science lessons from secondary school that you remember today?
Density was a huge one. Why do things sink and float? I mean, why is a Coke can and a Diet Coke can, which one's sinking, which one's floating? Things like that. It was always when we were walking into the science lab, there was some mad demonstration going on at the top of the room. And you'd be thinking for 20 minutes, when is the teacher going to start doing this? When are we going to find out the answer? So I suppose I tried to bring that in my own teaching as well and get students thinking. And you can see there's so many questions out there today. It's brilliant. Great showcase.
So can you give me an example of some of the lessons you teach yourself that get students interested in science?
One I love teaching, and it always, I suppose, kind of sticks in the back of my head, was why are springs springy? We do these experiments where we're talking about the extension of a spring, but, you know, why is it springy? Why does it not go back to its original shape? I just let students off, give them any amount of equipment and say, investigate it, tell me why, give me an explanation, instead of going through the book and saying, this is Isaac Newton, this is this, that and the other. So it's great. Yeah, look it.
And how do students respond to lessons like that?
Well, the whole new junior cert is all about inquiry-based learning. So, like, they love it. They love them hands-on, you know, in many subjects that mightn't be as hands-on. So in the quinta science, I suppose, to get to, I suppose, exercise that creative process that they have and see where it takes them.
And what about students who are less interested in science? How do you kind of convince them that science is worth studying?
Well, by making it group work orientated and like that hands-on, it does kind of it can trig different elements for them. Like in the new junior cert, they study Earth and space, and they might get a flair for that, which we've never taught before in the course. So it's nice that they can explore different aspects of it. It's not just all straight lines and out of the book. It is going left, right and centre, and there's many overlaps in various subjects, so it's great.
What's your favourite resource for teaching science?
My best resource is my teachers in school. We are brilliant working as a unit in Kishogue, and we share every idea that we have. There's never a conversation start from table that's not about what we did in class, so we're really good. My colleagues are my best resource, no doubt.
And finally, Christina, can you tell me a little bit about the students you've brought here today to SciFest and what their project is?
Yes, so my three students that I've brought, they have developed a spoon for a person with rheumatoid arthritis. So as we know, they're hands can get swollen and stiff and can get locked in certain positions, so when it goes to eating food it can be very difficult for them. So they've developed a spoon which has a large handle, and it basically allows them to eat like porridge and cereal and things like that while allowing for their hands to shake. And yeah, so they've many different ideas. They've already planned on expanding from today. They're getting such great feedback, so yeah, brilliant for them.
And indeed it seemed to be brilliant for all the scientists at the SciFest Festival on the day, as mentioned there by Christina Troy from Kishogue Community College in Lucan. Now we come to the national winner of this year's SciFest. Timothy McGrath is a sixth-year student in Killorglin Community College in County Kerry. I asked Timothy to tell me about his project.
So my project's basically using botany and engineering, and I developed a system that houses halophyte plants, which the aim is to actually uptake the nutrients from pollution in the ocean to actually help stop dead zones.
Okay, so can you give an example of why that's important?
Yeah, so Ireland has a lot of areas that are in high pollution, so the estuaries and lakes around Ireland, and this causes a lot of algae blooms, which then decreases the amount of oxygen in the actual water, which has an effect on the actual sea life in there.
And how did you get interested in this topic?
I kind of got interested in the topic by just doing a bit of research myself. Also, kind of to a lake and also an estuary near where I live has been classified in the news as eutrophic. So I kind of got interested in...
What does that mean?
It's basically an area that has a low oxygen level. So I got interested in kind of a way that I could actually help solve the problem.
Okay, and how did you get interested in science more generally? Because this is not your first year to be involved in the SciFest.
Yeah, so I've entered SciFest over the numerous years that I've been in secondary school. I'm in sixth year now, so my last year kind of at it. I kind of started it in first year kind of to do with technology and just trying to see problems and try and help people. And then over the last few years, I've done different projects to do with blind people and then also genetic engineering.
And do you have any plans to take this project further?
Yeah, so I'm kind of working at the moment to continue the process, try and get kind of funding maybe to hopefully actually get it testing and a fully working model in the actual rivers.
And you said you're in leaving cert year, so what are you hoping to study next year?
I have kind of interest in both kind of science and technology. Hopefully maybe something creative as well, so maybe product design or anything around the lines of anything like that.
And Timothy McGrath was named the overall winner of SciFest 2019. I also spoke to Timothy's mother to get a parent's perspective on the event, but somehow I lost that recording, so I'm sorry about that. But what happens to students who are successful at SciFest? I spoke to Aaron Hannan, who is one such student. He's a former winner, in fact, of SciFest and is now a research fellow at NUI Galway. I asked him to tell me about winning the competition.
I won SciFest in 2017 with a project called EnableArm, and that really kickstarted my career, to be honest. It was a medical device project that I was doing when I was in school, inspired by my granddad, and that's really set me off to become a medical device engineer slash entrepreneur.
Can you tell me a little bit about the medical device that you developed?
Yeah, so during SciFest, I developed a device to help my granddad shave independently. So my granddad actually suffered quite severely from post-stroke paralysis. So one of the things that really bothered him was not being able to look after personal care, like shaving, by himself. He's a proud West of Ireland man. He liked to be, you know, clean-shaven, presentable. And that was something he really wanted to do himself. So what I built was a headset device that could automatically shave the face and was controlled by your voice. So you use a system of sensors and servo motors to position a rotary shaver around your face, and then you could switch it on and off, tell it where to go with your voice, done through a Bluetooth app.
One of the risks of shaving is that you cut yourself. So how did you make sure that didn't happen?
Yeah, so I mean, it was a really interesting project in that way, because I had to, first of all, go out and actually meet people who were affected by this, because obviously I'm a young man myself. I don't particularly understand in depth what the problem is. So I actually did a lot of work with Spinal Injuries Ireland, with Cree Heart and Stroke Charity, with the Mayo Parkinson's Group, and went out and figured out, obviously, that if you're a post-stroke patient and you get a cut, that's a massive problem, because that they mean blood thinning medication and a bleed can be serious. So I actually built that into the design process then. So I used a rotary blade shaver and a kind of mechanism that pulled it in and out so that there was no danger of a cut actually occurring, because that was the key component of the design.
Has the project been developed from what you originally came up with?
Yeah, so since I actually won SciFest, I got the chance to go to the International Science and Engineering Fair, which was an amazing experience, and came away with the first award in embedded systems, which was amazing. I got an asteroid named after myself, which was a pretty nice personal achievement. But in terms of where the project went after that, I got it funded through the Launchbox program in Trinity College, which was amazing. So I got to actually take this and make it a startup business, which was incredible. After that, it was funded in NUI Galway through the Translational Medical Device Lab. And unfortunately, after that, we kind of figured out that the commercial feasibility for the device wasn't really there. But I guess it was bitten by the bug of medtech and entrepreneurship and trying to develop devices that make people's lives better. So since then, I've been working on a new device. It's a project called Lily Devices, and we've recently been funded by Enterprise Ireland. So it's a project to help prevent hair loss during chemotherapy, a new medical device. It's something I'm really passionate about, and obviously that whole interest was sparked here at SciFest.
And before SciFest, you obviously had to study science. When did you realise that you were interested in science more than maybe your classmates?
I guess I was always interested in science and really enjoyed it as a school topic. But I think, you know, coming to these science fairs and seeing the energy and passion, I think I went one year as a spectator to a SciFest event. You just see how engaging it is, how enthralling it is. And I think that's what really makes a difference, right? That there's so much energy in the room, there's so much passion, and so many people willing to see you succeed. And I think that really drew me in. I guess almost SciFest kickstarted my love of science, more than my love of science kickstarted SciFest.
And what about your science teaching in school? Do you remember any particular lessons or anything you particularly enjoyed about learning science in secondary school?
I think I have to mention that I had some brilliant science teachers in school who I think not only did they encourage us in our curricular activities to explore the content that was there in the syllabus, but they also encouraged us to look beyond that. So I know my physics teacher, Mr. Kevin Boyle, who continues to be a teacher with SciFest, really encouraged my EnableArm project and, you know, was really fantastic in pushing me to continue to develop the product further. But also, I mean, I had examples of my chemistry teacher, even within the syllabus, telling me to look beyond that and say, all right, well, if you're interested in that one, you should come in tomorrow and talk to me a bit more about that. Look it up. Look at the Wikipedia article on it. I think that's amazing, you know, when you empower students to look beyond the syllabus or encourage their creativity or their curiosity beyond just purely what's on the paper, I think that really unlocks their potential.
And why do you think so many people find science difficult?
I mean, it's an interesting question. I think we almost have a mental thing about, you know, oh, science is for certain people. But you know what? I think we have to maybe change the narrative about that, really. Science is for everybody. We all encounter science every day in our lives. And I think it's something that's accessible for everyone at every level. There's a part of science that can appeal to anyone, whether it be sports science, psychology, you know, behavioral studies, all the way to the deep physical side, like quantum physics or, you know, chemistry, organic chemistry, that kind of thing. There's a flavor of science for everybody. And I think we have to maybe show people that science is diverse and maybe not just one discipline that's all bunched together.
And what is it, do you think, that makes a good scientist from your experience now of being a research fellow in NUIG?
I think really what makes the best scientist is not who's the best at maths or who's the best at chemistry or who's the best at physics. It's who's the best at working with others, who's the best at communicating their ideas, and really who can communicate to the public the value of their research. I think that's really what makes the best scientist is who's the best communicator and who's the best at bringing other people together to understand their vision.
That was Aaron Hannan, who won SciFest in 2017 and who is currently working as a research fellow in NUI Galway. My final interview at SciFest 2019 was with Rory Gagan, a former colleague of mine, and Dr. Owen Gill from Waterford Institute of Technology. I asked both Rory and Owen for their thoughts on SciFest and on science teaching more generally. I began the conversation by asking Rory Gagan what is most engaging for primary and secondary school students in science lessons.
Simple, practical, either demonstrations or experiments. But a good demonstration is every bit as good as having people exploring all day. They can explore stuff all day and learn nothing. Whereas if you have a good demonstration where they can actually see what's going on and they absorb the concept, they learn a hell of a lot more.
Could you apply that to a particular topic?
Well, just last week I was in a school and I was doing some stuff with mirrors. So what do you see when you look in the mirror? And the kid says, oh, I see my reflection. I said, look at the crest of your pullover now. What do you see? Oh, it's backwards. I said, not only that, but so are you. You're backwards too in that mirror. That's not what you really look like. But I said, I have a mirror here which shows you what you really look like. And I have two mirrors at right angles. I said, look in there. Oh, I can read the writing. It's the right way around. I said, so are you the right way around. This is what you really look like. And they were intrigued. So simple, but very effective.
And how would you apply that to other topics then across the science curriculum?
Oh, well, you could apply it. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily say that works the same way in other subjects, but I would say more about mirrors. Why does the thing work at right angles and not in other angles? Or if you have smaller angles, then you get multiple images. Why does a bicycle reflector reflect light back to the car that illuminated it? It's for the same reason. There are these right angle corners inside the back of the reflector. The light bounces around off the three of them. It bounces back the direction it came from. There's a similar one on the moon that the astronauts put up there. They shine a laser at it. It's a three-cornered, it's a corner mirror. So you shine a light at it from any direction. It comes right back in the same direction. But it's the same principle as the two mirrors at right angles, which just apply to three dimensions rather than two. So you can extend anything like that, and still kids can understand it. That's what
and where can teachers get such ideas for teaching science?
Reading, exploring. A lot of teachers come to in-service looking for a handout. Rather than going and doing a reading themselves, researching, just say, I don't know about this, so I will make it my business to find out. You know, I used to ask the students, say, on such and such a topic, what do you still not understand? What did you do about it? In other words, putting the onus on them to say, okay, I didn't understand that, but I have done the following to rectify the situation.
Owen, I associate you more with maths than science, but you have thoughts on teaching science as well in school.
Absolutely. This echoes something that Rory said. I think that particularly in secondary schools, we have laboratory sessions, but and we have what we call experiments. They're generally not experiments because we know the answer, but we're too focused, I think, in these on the laboratory methods, which is important, but not forever. The important thing is to understand the phenomenon. And I think we get caught up, say, for instance, in experiment to do Boyle's Law, say, for instance. We have a rig with some way of applying pressure. We probably have a mercury YouTube or something, and the pupils are there focused on the apparatus. They're focused on doing the graphs and taking the measurements. They're not focused. They miss the phenomenon itself. What we want people to know about Boyle's law is that when you increase the pressure, the volume of a gas decreases. And when you decrease the pressure, the gas expands. That's what we want everyone to know. Knowing that PV is equal to K is a bonus. But what we have is we have people learning off PV is equal to K, but not having developed that intuition for what's happening in the materials. So we need to be concentrating on developing intuition about forces, energy, and materials in our science, rather than focusing on getting that straight line on the graph.
So it's like as if you're saying that it's the materials are not an end in themselves, it's how they're treated in the classroom, is that right?
Yeah, I think we're too focused, particularly at the at second level, we're focused on doing a laboratory procedure rather than the real value in these practical demonstrations is to see what's happening and to think and question what's happening in the material, what's happening in the gas, what's happening in the spring, what's happening to the trolley that's accelerating off the bench. Not to be worried so much, you know, at a later stage, yeah, worry about can we verify whichever particular laws or equations or formulas we're looking at. But the most important thing is the phenomenon. Can we understand and can we be familiar with what's going to happen when we meet this again in another application? And can we form a reasonable explanation in our own minds about what's going on?
But given that we all know that children are naturally curious, why are they not asking these questions in science class? Rory?
Very often the teacher doesn't understand the concept. Again, I used to do a thing here. I had a bag of materials, plastic bag of stuff, and a plastic aquarium. I'd fire the bag of things into the water. Some would sink, some would float. And I did this year after year. And I'd say, why do some things sink and some things float? And invariably, the answer I got was, heavy things sink and light things float. And I'd say, okay, fair enough. We'll take them out and weigh them. Of course, I had them rigged because they were all the same weight. So now I said, okay, they're all the same weight. So now your argument, heavy things sink and light things float, is not working. What's going on? And maybe after a while, some people would say, I noticed that the bigger things are actually floating and the smaller ones are at the bottom. So maybe it has something to do with the size and the weight. Now they're getting to a concept which they learned off in school, density equals mass over volume, which they never understood. In other words, the definition in school book was giving them the answer to a question that hadn't actually arisen in their head. They were now, in their later years, getting the concept of density, that, yeah, that thing is heavy for its size, that density is to do with how heavy it is, but also how big it is. It's the combination of the two at that proportion. So really, the textbook should have no definition of density on the chapter, but no definition at all, but a space at the end of the chapter saying, now can you define density? If they can define it then, but then they've probably understood it. But putting at the start, giving the answer before people have a question is a disaster.
You agree with that, Owen?
I do, and I think I spoke about secondary schools and the more formal experiments, but I think in primary schools, a lot of teachers are doing science, they're doing activities. It's not science unless there's questioning, unless we're seeking to understand what's going on, and there's too much of doing an activity. Like, say, for instance, if you have a battery and two wires and a bulb and you connect them together, you're not doing science. You're not doing engineering. You're only doing that when you're asking what's happening. And too often at primary school, it's just the activity. And we've done something, and let's put it away and we'll do something else next week. And unless you're asking those questions, it's not science.
And in your view, what is the value of an event like SciFest?
Oh, well, SciFest is fantastic because it gives a chance for all pupils to do science investigation. The ideal way it runs is when the school has a SciFest in school, where everyone gets a chance. It's all about participation, and the best of those then will go to the nearest Institute of Technology, which in my case is WIT, and some universities host them as well, and you go into the regional ones. And we're here at the national ones, and the standard here is fantastic, and it shows that it's an outlet for people to do those longer term, deeper investigations that they don't get a chance to when they're plowing through the curriculum. So it's a wonderful thing, and it's about participation. It gives a much better chance for participation for students, and that's really important. And you know, not every student will make it to the finals, not every student will win the final, but who's to know about all those students, thousands of students who did enter projects in the last year? Who knows which of those will float to the top in the future? Which of those will be the scientists that that we need to solve climate change and food supply, all these problems of the future?
Rory, do you want to add anything to that about the value of SciFest?
Yeah, well, the big value is the huge number of students involved. 10,000 students did SciFest just this year. 10,000. I mean, it's by far the biggest science competition in the country, and yet it doesn't get the publicity that it deserves.
And that was Rory Gagan, a member of the board of SciFest, and Owen Gill from Waterford Institute of Technology, who spoke to me at this year's SciFest National Finals last Friday. That brings us to the end of this week's podcast. Remember, you can listen back to this podcast and hundreds of others by going to seandelaney.com/podcasts. You can write to me by emailing insideeducationpodcast@yahoo.com. My book about teaching, Become the Primary Teacher Everyone Wants to Have, is available from all good libraries and online bookstores. Until next Wednesday, from me, Sean Delaney, thank you for listening.